This is an SBC Media Partners production.
Swung on, hit high and deep, right field. Let it be,
let it be. It is out of here.
Phillies fans, these are your club stories with Murph.
Check in with Greg Murphy. Murphy got a special guest, huh?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Glove Stories with Murph, brought to you by the Parks Casino Sportsbook app and the great folks at Red Robin. It is great to be back with you, and it is great to welcome in our guest today. He is actually a guy that I had an opportunity to cover while with the team over the last decade or so. He's a guy that I got to know very well. Always fun to be around, and a big part of the personality of the teams between the 2010 and 2020 era that I was doing the field reporting. So it's great to welcome in Cameron Rupp, who joins us today from Texas. Cam, good to see you, first of all. And
yeah,
thanks
how
for
are you?
I'm doing great. You're looking good.
Just settling into this new life that I'm living down here back home in Texas. And I tell you, I miss it, but I'm very happy where I am now.
Well, we're going to talk about that, because what you're doing now is really kind of cool, kind of interesting. And I want to hear a little bit about it, but I want to start with some of the glove stories, because that's what it's all about here on the podcast. And, you know, like I said at the beginning, you know, I got to know you and a lot of your teammates over the course of the years that you were with the Phillies, 5 years starting in 2013, when you made your major league debut. But even before that, let's go back to your early days in Texas, because I know sports was always a big part of your life, a big part of your family's life. You were not the first baseball player in your family to play at a professional level.
No, you're right. My dad and my grandfather, I don't know. My grandfather passed away when I was 3 months old, so I never got to develop any kind of relationship with him. But I do know he played a little bit of ball himself in the Dodgers organization way back, you know, there's no telling years. Before my dad's time, but my dad, mostly he played college ball at the University of Houston and then went on to have a little bit of a career in with the Montreal Expos organization. And that was way before my time. But he still tells me stories about those days when we get to talking and reliving, because it actually was pretty cool. When I played in the New York Penn League and the Florida State League, I played in the same stadiums that he did. So we got to kind of share some of those memories together, really special. It was cool to talk about. It's still cool to talk about, because we got to live out our dream. I did a little bit further than he did, but he got to live his dream through me, and it was really cool.
Yeah, you know, the father-son connections stories that we hear very often in the world of sports are some of my favorite. And we've talked to so many guys over the course of this season, and so many of you guys have had that experience where you know, dad got to a particular level, and then the son was able to take that and kind of run with it and make it all the way to the big leagues, which was, I'm sure, your father's dream. It was certainly your dream. Yeah. And you were able to make it a reality. But going back, just growing up, I mean, so you have a younger brother and a younger sister. I would imagine that the Rupp household was constantly busy, depending on the season, going with sports, right?
Going. You know, we outnumbered our mom and dad. You know, there's three of us and two of them. So it's very hard for all of us to be. It's very hard for us to be, you know, at everywhere we needed to be without hitching a ride from somebody. But my brother, he played ball all the way through college, but never got the chance to play professionally. He's a lot smaller than me. You know, people see us together and they're like, there's no way y'all are related. They're two complete opposite ends of the spectrum, just like my mom and dad.
Right.
And he got more of my mom's side than I got my dad's. But he played sports. My sister, she played, or she participated. How about that? She participated. She was not much of the sports. She played a little bit of soccer. little bit of softball as a kid, but then she was a competitive dancer.
Okay.
She danced, did the drill team in high school, and then went on to college and just kind of living the everyday corporate America life. And, but we were always going. And one of my favorite stories that I like to tell is when I think I was 9 or 10 years old. Now, obviously I can't drive. My brother and sister had to be somewhere, so my mom took them. I'm stuck at home waiting to go to baseball practice. My dad says he will be home in time to take me. And my dad's one of the coaches. He's an assistant coach, right? And he gets there and, damn it, we're late. We're late. We're getting to the field. So they've already started practice. Well, because I'm late, guess who's got to run? Me. I'm 10 years old. I can't drive. So I'm out there running sprints, running across the outfield while my dad's coaching. And I'm just looking back just like, you know what, there's nothing that I could have done. I guess I could have called and gotten a ride, but I was told that I was going to be on time and all this mess. And my dad just, he gets in the car after practice, goes, I'm sorry, man. Yeah, it should have been you running, not me. I couldn't do anything about it, you know? And so that we were always on the move, you know, and my mom, she's the best. I can't tell you how many times she dropped me off at practice and my dad would take me home. And then whatever for my next practice, if it was the next day or a couple of days later, I left my bag in my dad's car.
Oh,
you
God.
Know, and she's having to drive to Dallas to go get it and come back and take me to practice. And she was a champ. She did it for us, and she still makes our family go around. But it was always, we were moving, going around, and then obviously football started, and
right,
that was a whole nother deal.
Yeah. Yeah, listening to you tell that story, it's really the great American story. It's what families go through from coast to coast and north to south. You know, the bags in the other car. You got to be kidding me.
Those weren't the words that were said. You got to be kidding me. There was a few other choice words in there, Murph.
Oh, believe me. I know it. I've said it. Yeah, no doubt about it. It's great. You mentioned football. You were obviously always a big kid. What was your first love? Was baseball the first love?
Baseball was my first love. Football was a very, very close second. I had opportunities to play football in college, but I had there was no future. There was no future past if I went to college. I don't think. I could be wrong. I could have gotten bigger, stronger, faster. I don't know.
Were you a lineman?
Were you a lineman?
Linebacker. Yeah. Linebacker, right. Okay. and defensive end kind of. I played on that outside edge kind of. Sometimes I was up, sometimes I was down. But had the opportunities to play in college, but it was more my future's in baseball. I just happened to be good at football. I was an overall pretty good athlete growing up. Hated playing basketball. I made the B team in seventh grade, and I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. Hated track, couldn't run. Yeah. Football was Friday night in Texas, you're playing in front of 15,000 people, you know, small towns completely shut down. There's nothing open. You know, the movie Friday Night Lights and the TV show, they paint a pretty good picture of what football's like in Texas during high school season. And it was special to be a part of something like that. But I think I made the right choice.
Yeah, I think you probably did, for sure. When you think back, and you know, even guys like myself who never made it past collegiate sports, the memories of those times, and we didn't have high school football like that here. But you know, I did play baseball and playing, you know, in big tournaments, and those memories to this day are some of the best, you know, sporting memories that I have. I know you and I have had this conversation before, or I'm pretty sure we have, but when you think about, you know, getting to the big leagues and kind of realizing that dream, where does high school football in Texas fall into that hierarchy of awesome sports moments in your life?
Way at the bottom.
Oh, really? Okay. See, I bet there are guys that are different.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very difficult to compare them because they're on the same scale. When you say, as far as where Texas high school football is,
yeah,
to the big leagues, like it's the big leagues of Texas. If you don't play in college and if you go and win your state championship and you're in, you know, that's the big leagues of Texas. And then, you know, obviously the big leagues playing baseball. I mean, that's your dream from the time you first put on a glove, you know, and for most kids, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
And doing that, and everybody would always ask me, you know, what's it like? What's it like? You know, what? And I'd always tell them, it is everything you think it is times about a million. You know, and you literally get to live out your dream that you set on. You have, you know, you're in the backyard playing wiffle ball with your brother or your sister or whoever and your friends, and you're at the bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, game seven of the World Series. Everybody says it, right?
Yep.
And obviously, you know, I didn't have the opportunity to do any of that, but you know, I got to live it in a major league stadium. And that's the coolest part for me is, you know, I set out on this goal as, you know, I guess it's like my dad said, we talked about this the other day. This is the first year in 29 years that I haven't played baseball, almost 30 years. And it's like, wow, I got to do that for almost 30 years. And that's special in itself. And so, I mean, it's two different scales when you compare them, but in Texas, football is a big league. The high school football playoffs, Friday night's big leagues, but then the major league baseball, that's that dream as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's great perspective when you think about it like that. Mm-hmm. It really is. All right. So, you play out your high school years, playing baseball. And I went back and I was looking at your numbers and they're just ridiculous. But I think most guys that end up in the big leagues just had ridiculous numbers in high school. Not everybody, but most guys, but yours were ridiculous. But even when you got to, I think 1 year, just to put it in perspective, you batted close to 700, one season in your high school
senior season. I hit like 665 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good year. You're getting on.
I was happy with it, I guess.
Yeah. It was okay with you. You get drafted out of high school, mm-hmm, by the Pittsburgh Pirates. You think better of it. No. You wanted to go to college, right? I know you, and I thought to myself, you wanted to go and play in Texas, right? That's what you wanted to do.
That was, you know, from when everybody was coming to the house, talking, scouts, everything, we told them and said, it's got to be life-changing, big-time dollars.
Right.
I want to go to school. And if it's not going to be the first few rounds and a lot of money, don't even bother.
Right.
You know, and I got some phone calls early in the draft asking for, and I had told them my number and I wasn't coming off of it. And so, you know, the Pirates ended up taking me really, really late. And they said, well, we'll see what we have left over. And if we can do something, we'll do something. And I said, okay. And obviously they didn't. And I tell you, that going to Texas was the best decision I've ever made. The three best years of my life, played for a national championship. Love. I mean, every bit of, you know, our football team was great. Yep. We were great. Won conference championships, and like I said, played for a national championship in Omaha. And that's, you know, that, I mean, it's just another chapter in the story to write.
Yeah.
And
a great one.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, my parents, I'll catch my parents talking about it sometimes when they're watching TV, watching, you know, like when the World Series is on and they're watching it, they'll say, man, they'll compare big league games to my 3 years in Texas. They just, the friendships everybody made, the, yeah, the families, it was a really special time. And I'm 100% glad that I chose that route, because when I got to low A in Lakewood, New Jersey, I don't know if I was an 18 or 19 year old kid would have been able to survive some of them 13, 14 hour bus rides,
right,
away from my family. That's a very, very difficult step to take.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, so much, baseball is such a unique sport in that world, because so many guys do come right out of high school. I mean, I think about where I was mentally, physically in high school, mm-hmm, to come out and immediately be thrust into an adult world, because you're living on your own, you're trying to figure things. I mean, yeah, roommates and teammates and stuff like, right, that. But still, it's a difficult way of life. You know, Ben Davis, a good friend of mine, you know, the yeah, second overall pick in the draft, he got dropped off halfway across the country at age 18 and was like, that was it. He was on his own. And
here you go. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Go and go play ball yeah, and play well. One of the, yeah, toughest sports in the world to play when, yeah, you're not in the right headspace and you got to go out there and do it. But I think the other part of it, Cameron, and again, knowing you, you embrace the college experience, right? I mean, you were a college student and, mm-hmm, and enjoyed everything about college the way, yeah, most of us do, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. School was hard. Balancing school and sports, it's very difficult. There's a lot of nights I won't say I pulled too many all-nighters, but I mean, it was you were Monday through Friday, you're constantly going, and it's 8 o'clock to, you know, 6:30, 7 o'clock every single day. It's almost like a full-time job going to class. And days you didn't have class, you were still at the academic center doing study hall, right, preparing for tests, writing papers, whatever it may have been. But you learn to balance. You learn how to balance things, and you learn how to take care of yourself, because you, right, don't. I mean, you got a lot of people helping you. You a lot of guidance. A lot of people doing your schoolwork sometimes, but it's still a very, I mean, it's a student athlete is a full-time freaking job, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially at a university like that, mm-hmm, and, you know, some of the bigger sports as well.
Yeah. I remember my first, I graduated from a real small private school, 88 people or something in our class. First college class I walked into at 350 people. You want to talk about bright eyed looking like where? And so I sure as hell took that backseat corner and just kept my mouth shut.
Put the hat down.
Yeah. I head down, hat covered, and I just was on my computer acting like I was taking notes.
Yeah. Yeah. I can totally picture that scene. I think that happens across the country daily at our major universities. But
absolutely.
But like you said, you wouldn't trade those days for anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you're still a big UT guy in terms, yeah, of watching the football, and I would imagine still watching their baseball program as well. Mm-hmm. Do you get back there at all ever?
Yeah. I caught, they were actually up in Dallas. They had a couple games in Dallas this year that I caught. Didn't make it to Austin for any games. Kept up with them. I'm actually going back to school. I'm finishing my degree.
Finishing school.
Good for you. And this first couple semesters, I'm going online, doing everything virtual. But then to graduate, I will actually go back down to Austin, and I'm going to be their student coach.
Okay.
I'm going to apply for that gig and get to run around and kind of start a little coaching career.
There you go. I love it. All right. The dream happens again, because you get drafted again, obviously, mm-hmm, this time by the Phillies, and this time in the third round. It was the 43rd round the first time with the Pirates, third round with the Phillies. And at that point, after 3 years of college, you're ready to go. What do you remember about the first time, you heard, hey, I'm going to be a part of the Phillies organization? Do you remember what that was like?
Well, yeah, because we were practicing. We were getting ready for Super Regional my junior year of college, and they had the first round the night before, and I thought it was kind of a long shot in that first round, but there was still a chance that I may get picked up if numbers were right or whatever. And but the second day, there was about four or five teams that had said, if you're available, we're taking you. And some of those didn't work out. But then all of a sudden, we're practicing mid-morning. Our baseball ops guy goes, Philadelphia Phillies. I was like, oh. Which I had had a couple of interviews with them.
Okay.
But didn't have a phone call the day before, or anything. It was a couple other Red Sox, Mets, Tigers. Those were the three teams that had really shown the most interest. And so Phillies, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And just to put in perspective, this was 2010.
Yeah.
In the middle of the Phillies' greatest run in mm-hmm. franchise history, right?
Yeah. Just won a World Series. I believe Roy Halladay was just came over. Cliff Lee came back. I was like, dang, okay, cool. Yeah. And, you know, they told me, you know, this is a, you know, very good organization to be a part of. In a sense of, you know, they're winning. The players are kind of older, so they'll be kind of towards the end of their careers, and there's an opportunity for you, you know, being a high draft pick. If I go perform, we'll see.
Yep.
And
really, that's kind of how the way it played out for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It worked out. There was a little bit of luck involved in some, and in this game, you need that a lot.
No doubt.
It's luck for me, bad luck for others. But that's part of the way the game works.
Yeah. That's true in any walk of life. You know, it just is, you know, sometimes you need a break, and that break, you want to call it luck, you want to call it being in the right place, whatever. Life. That's the way things work.
Exactly.
So real quickly, the minor leagues, you weren't there long, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, you had already played your 3 years of collegiate ball. So that's, you know, very similar to the low A, you know, Clearwater kind of level. So you'd been there, kind of done that, and made your way through the organization. Do you have positive memories of being in the minor leagues, or for you, was it just uber focused? I got to get to the big leagues.
I mean, I had the focus of getting to the big leagues and what I wanted to do, but I wasn't going to let that get in the way of me still playing the game, having fun, developing relationships with the guys that I played with, and just playing the game. I think this game can beat you down, and it can humble you really, really quick. And it's not just, you know, getting too big for your britches. But if you have too much focus and you're too tense and it can drive you down, and it can beat you down mentally and physically. Whereas if you're playing, having fun, having a good time, and really just living while you're playing, that's what helped me. I tried, you know, I'm a goofy guy. I enjoy to have a good time, make people laugh at myself. Not get too hard on myself. There's times where, you know, I made my mistakes and I had to, you know, beat myself up, punish myself, whatever. That was part of it. But I always say I was just dumb enough not to let myself get in a slump and I'm just dumb enough not to get too big for my britches.
You know what? That's a good way of thinking about virtually everything.
Yeah.
When you think about it. Yeah. And that's what I remember about you. So, a lot of the guys that made their major league debuts in and around the same time that you did, obviously you came up with, through the organization. I'm thinking the first guy that comes to mind is Tommy Joseph, because I know you guys, were tight, still tight. I'm imagining
this day. Yeah, me, Tommy, Cody Ashy, and Darren Ruff. We were all kind of right there in that same time period. We have a group message that hasn't stopped, and it goes off every day. And and actually, you know, Tommy was kind of part of my good luck. When he got traded over, he got too many foul balls to the head, and I was playing well enough, and I kind of just took over that little spot he was in. But that didn't stop us from our friendship. It didn't quit at that point when I traded spots with him. You know, he couldn't have been more supportive, proud. Yes, that could have been him just as easily. But he still made it. He figured it out. And I think that just shows a little bit of the character he has. Yeah. I think a popular question I used to get asked was a little like, well, what about the guy that's below you or your backup? Or the guy? And it was like, it's a professional competition. Yeah, but you understand it's on the field. It's not you can't sit there and wish failure on somebody. That just makes it worse for you.
Yeah.
Because now you're putting pressure on yourself. But in all, it's just not being a good person.
Right.
You know, you want the best. You take care of your own self, you're going to give yourself the best chance.
Yeah. Yeah. And just so folks understand, Tommy was a catcher. And when he came over from San Francisco, they decided, because of the concussion issues, they switched him to first base. And that allowed, gave you another opportunity to slide in there and show them what you were doing. You are coming in. I don't want to get ahead of myself. You make your major league debut in 2013. 8 years I remember ago
today.
What's that?
8 years ago today.
I didn't realize
to the
that.
Day.
I didn't
Eight
realize
years ago.
September 10th. Debut. You're absolutely right. Yeah, we're taping Eight this on ago. September the 10th. Well, congratulations. Happy anniversary. That's awesome.
Yeah, right?
So, in so many ways, what we're doing, Glove Stories, this idea of this podcast for you guys to come back and tell these, to me, the best glove story for almost every one of you is the day you get to the big leagues and make your major league debut. For you, that's 8 years ago today. What was that day like for you? When you found out, and then that you were coming up, and then you got into the game.
So it's kind of a I actually got called up a week before I made my debut, and I get goosebumps thinking about it, because it's such a special time for anybody. But for me, my family was in Lehigh that whole last week of the season, and we were playing in Lehigh and Scranton, so it was a real close commute. And so we were going back and forth, and they were there, my brother, sister, dad, mom, everybody's up there. We're, last game, they're set to take off the last day of the season. And I'm driving home. I'm packed up, you don't know anything.
Right.
And I say goodbye, see y'all at home, whatever. I get to the field, and we have a 1 o'clock game or something like that, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock game. And about 10:30, I get a phone call from my dad, and he's like, "Hey, I'm going to stay. And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'll fly home tomorrow. Like, I'm going to fly home tomorrow or drive back with you." Oh, okay. And to me, it never really crept into my mind as well, he's going to stay and wait for me to get called up. I don't know if I'm getting called up. I don't have a clue, because Steve LaRude was on that team, and he had been in the big leagues up and down all year. So I don't know what I don't know how this works and how, I guess you say, the politics of baseball go at this point in my career. I was 24 years old. And so after the game, we played the game. They took me out in the sixth inning and I was pissed. I was like, why? I'm fine. What are we doing? Oh, you're good. Yeah. Happy offseason. You know, screw you, Brundy. Like, no.
Brundy, love Brundy.
You know, and so, you know, I was like, okay, whatever. And I go into the clubhouse, put my turf shoes on, come back out, and don't think anything of it, and go back, start packing, you know, get a couple of texts, hey, congratulations, season's over, da-da-da-da. Packing my stuff up, I walk by Brundy's office to go grab my bats, and he goes, come here. And I'm like, he didn't say a name. I'm like, me? Yeah, come on. He goes, how are you feeling? Fine. I don't know. I don't understand why you took me out, but whatever. You know, I know it's the last game of the year and you want everybody to play or something. I don't know. And he goes, well, are you going to clean yourself up? And at this point, now, this was 8 years ago, so you got to think, I had a lot more hair. And I had kind of grown it out. And I looked this greaseball old man look. Probably had a mustache, like just. And he's, you going to clean yourself up? He's like, well, there's a dress code in Philadelphia. You got to look nice. And I was like, he goes, yeah, congratulations. Shook my hand, gave me a hug. Sal was in there, Ray Burris. They all, congratulations, give me a big hug. And I'm like, you know, I'm almost shaking.
Yeah.
This is what you dream of. And so I get on the phone. I call my mom, or I call my brother first. He's biggest fan. Call my brother, and he's, I tell him. All right, he's fired up. He's like, when, how do I get there? I got to get there tomorrow, right? And my mom and sister were together, so I had them on speakerphone. And my dad is just sitting out in the stands. He's got no just waiting idea. For you. Yeah. He got no idea. He's like, we're thinking, and finally, I mean, I called so many people, and my dad's still saying, he's like, what are you doing? Like, what's the deal? And finally, I walked out. I said, hey, come down by the dugout. You know, I'm about ready. I come out there and I just kind of looked at him and I wasn't going to say anything. And I could, and I just put my arms out and gave him a huge hug. No words, no nothing. And I got to tell him, I said, and I didn't say I did it. I said, we did it, because he was such a huge part of my life and my career. And both of us had tears in our eyes. And I mean, that's the first time I've really seen my dad cry. And that was a really, really special, special moment. I goosebumps thinking about it. And
you and me both.
I mean,
and I know the story. So
yeah. And it's one of those things you dream of. And not just getting to the big leagues, but being able to do something like that, and it's not just a phone call and everybody's scrambling to get to Philadelphia. You know, he's right there and got to drive into Philadelphia with me from Lehigh.
That's awesome. When you stop to think what that must have meant for him and your family, it's so cool. And a part of what I got to do over that course of the decade was interview your family, the families of the guys that had been called up. And, you know, every once in a while I'd pop into the stands and interview. I'm pretty sure I interviewed your father the day you made your first major league start.
Probably.
Yeah, I think I did. But that comes a week later. You're starting in a Major League Baseball game. And that in and of itself is just an amazing feeling. Do you remember that game? Do you remember like everything about it, or do you remember almost nothing about it?
Oh, I remember a lot of it. So I remember Rhino comes up to me and he told me, he's like, hey, you're catching. I don't remember. I think we had an off day. It might have been a Tuesday. We had a day off. He's like, hey, you're catching on the day off, or the day after yeah. the day off. And that way, you know, it's my debut. He's like, you can tell your family you're coming, you know, get everybody up there that wants to be there. And so we're playing San Diego, and my buddy's pitching, Andrew Kastner. He's a couple years older than me. We grew up playing against each other when I played up, it was funny when he texted, he said, "You're not getting your first hit off of me." You know, so immediately, you know, I'm sitting there thinking like, oh no, how are we going to keep straight faces? How are we going to, you know, and I remember being nervous. I remember all that. And it wasn't until the third inning I got my first at bat. I was hitting eighth. And he actually had hit before us. I think we were down a couple runs early. And he hit before I got in the box, before I ever did it. And he looks at me and said, "Don't even think about it, buddy. Don't even think about it." And I remember my first pitch, he threw me a slider, and I swung like it was a fastball. Corkscrewed me straight into the ground. And he just smiled and shook his head, you know, and ended up striking out my first two at-bats. And my third at-bat, I hit a slider about 48 feet down the third baseline, and I hauled ass.
Yep.
I don't think I've run faster since then. And safe at first, and then I took a big old tumble right behind first base, rolled, slid, got right up, and they're safe. Everybody's laughing. I'm laughing. It was awesome. It was a really special, special day, and, you know, I'll never forget that one.
It's so funny. I've seen so many debuts over the years, and I remember your first hit because of the tumble. I remember it. I was 99% sure that was your first hit I was going to ask you. But it was memorable. You know, absolutely. Big guy like yourself, you hit it, like you said, 48 feet up the third baseline, and you're busting it down.
Going.
Yeah.
And I don't know,
just the way you drew it up, right?
yeah, exactly. And not many people have probably ever seen me run, but my legs don't go like this. I scoot. So it's real fun to watch me get, once I unhitch a trailer and get going, I go.
Yeah, but it's stopping is the problem.
Yeah.
It's
easier for me to go down.
Exactly. That's awesome. And then, you know, obviously that begins the dream. That begins the big league career. And, you know, the years that you were with the Phils organization were down years, unfortunately, for whatever reason. But you played with some great players. Great player. Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, the guy that was right there next to you, Carlos Ruiz, mm-hmm. you know, I know you guys had a great relationship. And then, you know, you played with Chase, and you played with Jimmy, and you played with Roy and Cliff. Guys, who was on the mound for your debut?
Tyler Cloyd.
Okay, Tyler Cloyd. Yeah, sure.
And they paired us up together just because we had worked together in AAA.
Right, makes sense.
And they wanted to make us as comfortable as we could be. And after that, the rest was really history, you know. And those guys, man, they were awesome. They were awesome. These guys have won World Series.
Yeah.
Thrown no hitters. Just been done everything that you want to do as a player, right? They've accomplished all this, and me coming in, they put me in between Ryan Howard and Chase Utley.
Pretty good.
Our lockers. And Cody Ashley was right there next to me. And I'm just like, I mean, big eye looking, I'm like, man, I watched these guys when I was in high school.
Right.
You know, like these guys made their debut several years before I had gotten to the big leagues and one, you know, like I said, one World Series, don't know hitters, Gold Gloves, home run derbies, all that. And I'm just like, man. And they weren't any different than me. They were great human beings, guys. I mean, guys I still call friends that I talk to here and there. They're just really, really special guys. And, God, it was a lot of fun to be in that clubhouse.
Yeah, and I would imagine the time you walk in and you see Howard, Rupp, Utley in a row, that kind of puts everything in perspective. Like, wow, what did I just accomplish? Right?
Yeah. You're sitting there, and you're just like, holy smokes!
Yeah,
like these are the guys. These are the guys, and the guys you look up to. The time, you know, when you're in minor league spring training and you got these guys that come over and play with you or come and talk to you and work out with you, they help guide you. They give you a little bit of information to help you, a little bit of advice to get you through the next level and what it takes. And they did it before us, you know, and so it just shows you, you know, if you put your mind in the right spot and go and you work and you're going to give yourself the best chance for it to play out the way you want it to.
When, if ever, does that feeling wear off that, you know, wow, here I am in a major league clubhouse kind of thing?
Never.
Yeah.
Never. It never does. It's still every time you came out for batting practice into an empty stadium and you look up and you're just like, it's just another day, but it's not just another day.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. You know, you pinch yourself sometimes when you're getting to live that life, and doing what you guys were doing. It's special. Yeah. You played what, 5 seasons with the Phils, and then, you moved on to different organizations, never back to the bigs.
Right.
But what do you remember about that time as, you know, one last shot, I guess, is what you're thinking to yourself. Get me back up there one last shot.
It was kind of a whirlwind for me. I spent, you know, from 2018 after I was released by Philadelphia in spring training, the very end of spring training, I spent time in Texas, Minnesota, Seattle, San Francisco, Detroit.
Yeah.
Oakland and Cleveland. And while that was a good time, it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, it had the lifestyle has some incredible perks. And then there's always there's some that are not. And let me tell you, going from clubhouse to clubhouse year in, year out for the last 2.5 years, like it got to be miserable. Yeah. It got to the point where it was like, man, I'm more worried about walking by that manager's office wondering if I'm gonna have a job than if I'm gonna play that night. And when those thoughts started creeping into my mind, I was like, that I may not be in the right frame of mind to keep doing this. And 2019, after that year in Oakland, going through, I gave myself a little bit of time where I was like, I kept working out, no phone calls, no interest. I was like, maybe this is it, whatever. And Cleveland called, I think, about 10 days before spring training. And I looked at my dad and said, all right, one more time. Let's see. And obviously 2020 was, I don't know if you call it a baseball season or what, I was at their alternate site in Cleveland. And after that was over, I was like, I don't want to do it anymore. That was the straw that broke the camel's back for me, as far as this just was not fun. And I'm sure that went for a lot of people, but
it did for sure.
For me, at the point where I was in my career, I was like, this just doesn't feel right.
Right.
You know, it wasn't, but I gave it that chance and couldn't be happier for it. And I loved it, every bit of it. And, had so many amazing moments, teammates, coaches. I mean, it was a very special time in my life, and I'll never forget it, man.
No doubt. And you know, you did it in a city, Philadelphia, who just absolutely loves their sports to the point where sometimes that's it can be difficult when things aren't going well. Yeah, but
you know, you certainly don't do it in a vacuum when you do it in Philadelphia. You right. do it in front of passionate fans, good and bad, but mm-hmm. you do it. And I think I got to believe that would heighten the experience, you know, that 5 years that you spent in the big leagues, that was for real, because you're doing yes. it in the Northeast, right?
Yes, absolutely. They were awesome. Now, they weren't so awesome during football season, but, you know, that's another story.
We're going to talk about that for one second in a minute. But yes, but go ahead. But, they were awesome.
You know, I loved them. They were always very kind to me and my family when we were up around walking in the city. They're a special group of folks. They're blue collar, hardworking, passionate people up there. And I thank them for the experiences I had. Still stay in contact with some of them on Twitter they were a lot of fun to play in front of, you know, and it was disappointing. Some of those years or all of the years were not really what any of us really wanted, but, they were a lot of fun to play in front of.
Yeah. I would agree with all of that. You joked about you're a Cowboys fan. If you're watching us right now on YouTube, you can see that Cam has his cowboy hat on, and there's a reason for that that I'm going to get to it really quickly. But you're a Cowboys fan. You grew up in the shadows of Cowboys Stadium, and yeah. you wear that on your sleeve. Now, obviously, in Philadelphia, the Cowboys are a hated organization, but I'll say this to Phillies fans, and I grew up in Philadelphia, and I've been an Eagles fan my whole life. But Mike Trout, who went across the country from our neck of the woods, is a rabid Eagles fan. And they want our players, Phillies players, to change their allegiance, but they don't want guys like Mike Trout to yeah. ever change. It doesn't make any sense.
It's ass backwards, Murph.
That's right. Let this man who has cheered for the Cowboys his entire life, I would have less respect for you if you had yeah, switched right. over and started wearing an Eagles jersey just to get the fans to like it. That yeah. that would have been terrible.
And that, you know, and that was always my argument. I like to joke yeah. around with the guys on Twitter, and I would be like, well, if your job took you to Dallas, are you going to become a Cowboys fan? Oh, my God, no, I never knew exactly. that. No, that star is just a disgrace. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, well, that's yeah. it. That's the end. Okay, our conversation's over. Don't say another word about it.
Now, had you been from Cincinnati and were a Dallas fan, okay, then maybe I could see them getting on.
A little bit different,
but
yeah.
That's different. You are a Cowboys fan. I always appreciated your allegiance, because no matter where I go, I'll always be a Philadelphia fan.
Right. So, and I may have been real young, but I do remember them winning 3 Super Bowls when I was a kid.
All right, don't bring that up, Cam. All right.
So, you know, just 3 of them just while I was born. There's a few more in there before.
Yeah, that was a couple.
You know,
hey, we got one. We got one recently.
Yeah,
it's starting to get in the past a little yeah. bit more.
It took we're right. in the past, but you know, I'll live and die by those numbers.
Before I let you go, this idea that you're a Cowboys fan, it's a lifestyle for you. I mean, what you're doing now, you are literally living the cowboy life, right? I mean, that's what yeah. you're doing.
I traded my spikes in for a different set of spikes, the ones that are on the back of my boots. You know, a pair of spurs that I wear every day now. Yeah. My best friend and I, he grew up, his family grew up on a ranch in Arch City, Texas. There's 1,200 people in this town. And this ranch just got passed down to the third generation. And teamed up and started a cattle company, and we run 270 mama cows on almost 4,000 acres.
Wow.
And it never I always loved the outdoors. I've hunted my whole life, fished, been around horses, never worked cattle. Never understood any of it or what it's like to be a cowboy. But I've learned a lot in the last almost a year now that we've been doing this together. And it's a lot of fun, man. There's many mornings I watch the sun rise and the sun set on the back of a horse. Wow. And checking cattle, working cattle. And the cool part about all this is there's other ranches that just neighbor us. And we day work. We go over there, we'll help brand their cattle, move their cattle, ship their cattle. There's been days where I've moved several thousand head of cattle in a week. And it's a very different lifestyle. I have a very, very big backyard now. And and a whole lot of pets.
Yeah.
That aren't really pets. But you know, it's a lot of fun.
Hard work.
Enjoy it. Yeah, and it's work, but it's honest work.
Yeah.
Building fence. I haven't learned how to weld yet. That'll probably be the next deal. Building fence, doctoring cattle. I've become some kind of a makeshift vet. You know, you gotta give shots when they're sick. They're just like any other animal. Dogs, they get sick. The cattle, they get sick and they spread it really fast too. So when they're real young, you gotta watch them. And, we've got almost 200 baby calves on the ground. And they're dropping as we speak. And I was out checking on them this morning. Haven't had to pull a calf yet. I don't know if I'm ready for that or not, but one day I'm sure I'm going to have to.
Hey, if Billy Crystal can do it, you can do it. That's what I like.
I'm not going to name him Norman, though.
There you go. Cam, I know you know this already, but you were one of my favorite guys during the course of your time in Philadelphia. I've always appreciated your availability and your willingness to be honest and talk about the game. So for that, I thank you. It is so good to see you and see you doing well back at school, working the ranch, and living the good life. No one deserves it more than you. So,
Man, I really appreciate it. And thank you for having me on. It's been fun. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe I'll have to come down to Texas. We'll do it live.
There you go. Yeah. You can go. We'll teach you how to castrate a calf.
we'll start. Maybe just give the shot. I could probably do that. Cameron Rupp joining us this episode of Glove Stories with Murph. Cam, good to see you. Best of luck with everything. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. Thanks, Murph. I appreciate it.
Hey, everyone. Murph here. And the Parx Sportsbook app is the official sportsbook partner of the real Philly sports fan. Bet on it all. Baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Live in-game play-by-play betting lets you bet while you watch. No better way to bet right now than the Parx Sportsbook app. The only sportsbook app backed by the number one casino in Pennsylvania and the only one I recommend. No one does live in-game play-by-play betting better. Bet the money line as it changes during the game on the Parx Sportsbook app. Plus, bet on individual player performances. In baseball, you can bet on hits, home runs, and pitcher strikeouts every inning. How about golf? You can bet on match winners, bet on leaders after rounds, and more. New customers sign up right now and get your first bet risk-free up to $500. Just download the app or click parxcasino.com/PA and use promo code ACTION. Do it now. Your first bet risk-free up to $500. Just download the app or click parxcasino.com/PA and use that promo code ACTION. The website has all the details. Get game previews, podcasts, and more on Twitter at Parx Sportsbook. You must be 21 and in Pennsylvania. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Glove Stories with Murph is brought to you by Red Robin. Whether you're hungry for a juicy gourmet burger with bottomless steak fries and an ice cold beer, or a crispy chicken tender salad and freckled lemonade, whatever you crave, there's something for everyone at Red Robin. So dine in or order curbside to go, delivery or catering. Order online now at order.redrobinpa.com.
Hey,
And welcome back to Glove Stories with Murph, brought to you by the Parks Casino Sportsbook app and the good folks at Red Robin. It is that time where we are reliving the 2008 season, the championship season, and we do so with the manager of the 2008 Phils. Charlie Manuel is here with us. Charlie, we're late August now as we relive these games, and things are getting exciting. You're not in first place yet. Those New York Mets are a half a game in front of you right now, but you're just coming off a four-game sweep of the Los Angeles Dodgers at home, Citizens Bank Park, 45,000 people on hand on August 26, 2008, the Phillies and the Mets. What was it like? I mean, the atmosphere, you know, sellouts every night at this point. The atmosphere for you guys must have been just awesome.
You know, Murph, we always say we have the most passionate fans, the best fans in baseball. And when you see, when we play in the Mets, I remember the game very, you know, like very good. And I remember excitement, energy, life, spirit. And, you know, like, and it was just a roar. And it was before the game. You could just feel the energy in the air. And of course, you know, like our fans were behind us, and we were in there, you know, like trying to take it to the Mets. And that, to me, like, that's probably a typical good setting in Philadelphia.
Yeah. A win in this particular game and you jump into first place. You're in first place with September right around the corner, exactly where you want to be as the season comes down to an end. The thing I remember about the 2008 season, and obviously it started in 2007 when you guys made the late run and got into the postseason, but the anticipation during the day about a game that night. I mean, you would be, you know, at the gas station or you'd be in the mall and someone would be like, hey, 7 o'clock, you got to be in front of your television. You got to be down at the ballpark because the entire city was so excited about what was happening down there. And I know you guys felt that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, very much so. I mean, every bit that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, but you're like, it seemed like they wanted to talk to you. I mean, they wanted to holler at you or they wanted to say something to you. They wanted some kind of a short conversation with you. But really,
And when you say holler at you, it was a good thing at this point. Right. I mean, they used to holler at you in the weren't winning, but now they're hollering at you for good reasons. So that's a good thing. All right. This was going to be a great game. The pitching matchup in this one was Pedro Martinez for the Mets, Jamie Moyer for the Phillies. The Mets began the game with three straight hits and had a one-run lead on the board before the Phillies even recorded an out in this one. Another one and a half innings, and it was 2-0 Mets, so they jumped out quickly on you. Jamie's first inning, he allowed two runs, four hits, and left the bases loaded. I know you're not panicking that early in the game, but you have to think to yourself, all right, is Jamie going to be able to get it together, and now I'm going to have to rely on my offense to kind of do it again?
You know, I always thought when the more I saw Jamie Moyer pitch, I always thought if he gets through the first and second inning, you know, pretty cleanly or easily, I think it when you hit kind of the middle innings of the game, I think that's when he's you know, like he's using all of his pitches,
and he's
not afraid to use his 84 mile an hour fastball and throw it inside the hitters. And he starts carving up more, and his confidence just keeps growing during the game. And I think for him to get through the first and second inning of the game sometimes, you know, that was where he had some trouble. But when he got through there, you know, like if like a one run or two runs, that's not too much. I mean, but if we're talking like four, five, six, then that's a different ball game. But
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, when Jamie would get you through the middle of the game, Murph, we were sitting pretty good.
Well, so he would allow another run in the second inning. So it was 3-0 Phils at the end of two, or 3-0 Mets at the end of two. And obviously Jamie wasn't at his best that day. But the thing about Jamie Moyer is he is such a competitor. And I know that, you know, probably the conversations between you and Rich Doobie and Jamie as that game progressed, they're probably not the easiest conversations because Jamie is stubborn as all get out, right?
Right, exactly. Hey, Murph, I'm going to tell a story. I think I've told it to you before. we were playing in Miami one day, and it's hot, really hot. And right before the game, you know, he comes in there in the dugout. Somebody says, you know what the temperature is here? It says 98 degrees. And he's standing right there beside of me and just looked at me. and he goes, what are you laughing at? And I said, well, I was just thinking about how I'd like to see this game go. And he said, well, you tell me how you'd like to see it go. I said, I'd like to see the leadoff hitter hit about a 500-foot home run off you. And he looked at me. He said, are you crazy? And I go, no. I think you'd pitch a good game. He says, why is that? I said, well, with, you know, all the confidence and how you can take the game up and down, I said, I think the hitters are going to come up our every one of them and see how slow you're throwing a ball, and every one of them is going to be trying to hit it out of the park. And then he looked at me and he said, oh, so that's how you evaluate me. And he goes out there that day. I don't know if you remember, but he gets us, I think, in the eighth inning.
Okay.
And we finally take him out in the eighth inning. And when I come in, he's on laying on the table, and they take him off the table, put him in the whirlpool, and they ice him down when he gets out. And he can't get up. Murph, he cannot. He was so tired that he could not get off the table. And I used to kid him about that. But that's who he was. And you know what? And don't be afraid to give him the ball.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I think, you know, like, he, for Jamie Moyer to pitch that long in the big league and have the career that he had, to me, like, he is a guy, you know, like, that really, like, proved the game wrong.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because, no doubt. You know, like, who he was the biggest overachiever that I was ever around.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, and that's exactly who he is, and the name of his book, you know, he wrote a book after he retired, and he said, tell me I can't do it. Tell me I can't do it is the name of his book, because that's what he was like. Go ahead. That's what I thrive off of that. Right, that's right, the way Jamie right. was. I love Jamie, and I loved watching him pitch because he was so crafty the way he went about his business. All right. But the Mets, meanwhile, are get another one in the third inning. Carlos Beltran led off the inning with a single. Carlos Delgado followed with another single. And then a name that may be familiar to some of our younger listeners, Fernando Tatis, the dad. Yeah, he hit a 3-run home run. 6-0 Mets. The Mets team was loaded from the top to bottom offensively. This was a pretty good rivalry at this point. And all of a sudden, you're looking up at a 6-0 deficit.
Yes, without a doubt. They had some big hitters on that team. Of course, they had Delgado, and they had Reyes in his prime, and mm-hmm. like, and they had Carlos Beltran. But Tatis, though, you know, like, if people don't really realize, they don't talk a lot about it, but Tatis was a pretty good hitter himself.
Yes, he was.
I mean, really, I remember him. I saw him in the minor leagues and stuff, and Murph, back then, I liked him. So yeah. him hitting a home run, you know, like that I knew he was very capable of doing something like that, but at that time I didn't want to see it, of course.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what this Mets team could do. I mean, they were a good team, and remember, you know, in 2007, you guys had chased them down. There was some animosity between these two teams at this point as well. Thank you, Jimmy Rollins, and you know, but I know neither team would have had it any other way, because that's what makes it fun, right? You know, you hate the other squad. So the Mets add another run. So it's now 7-0 New York Mets. Finally, in the fourth inning, you guys get on the board. Pedro Feliz sack fly. 7-1 at that point. But what's the message from you in the dugout? You're fourth inning and you're down 7-1 against a good team. What's the message up and down? Do you need to tell those guys anything at this point?
I don't need to tell them a whole lot. I just got to say, hey, look, stay with them. Let's chip away at them. Let's try to get something going ourselves. I said, we can come back. And a lot of times, hey, Murph, I've told you this before. I've had Howard, Rollins, Utley, and some of these guys come back, and, you know, like, especially when we was playing the Mets, mm-hmm. and in games like this, a lot of times we had high scoring games, and we would be behind, and they would tell me, they'd look at me, one of them would, or something, they'd go, hey, Chuck, no worry, we got them, you know, just watch. I mean, we got them, we always looked at it that way. You know, yeah. we always played out 27 outs.
Exactly.
You know,
like
that was a message that we always wanted to send. Let's play the complete game. And, you know, and basically, you know, like that's what we talked about. And these teams, you know, like these offensive teams, they played that way. I know that we're talking about the Mets and the Phillies in a huge game on 208, but the Cleveland teams that hit good always were the same way. We could come back, and this team right here could definitely come back and get you.
Yeah. And that's what starts to happen on this particular night. The Phillies begin to get to Pedro in the fifth inning. Clay Condrey leads off the inning with a double. Jimmy Rollins followed with a home run, 7-3. Chase Utley would walk. Pat Burrell would strike out, but then Ryan Howard hits a two-run shot. Boom. Just like that, it is 7-5. This team had come back so many times, you know, in the course of the year that coming back for them was almost second nature at this point.
Right. I want to ask you something. All the time you've been around the game, when you see a team do that, when you see them get close, and a lot of times, you know, like there's two different feelings at times. And, you know, like the momentum of the game just shifted.
Yes.
And we're down 7-5. And it's no thought in my mind that we're not going to win this game.
Right.
Believe me.
Right.
I mean, and I guarantee you as a fan and you know, being around the game and talking about it and things like that, you felt the same way before. And it's
absolutely
hard to explain how you feel. But at the same time, this is the kind of team that we had back then.
Yeah. And you have to have that kind of feeling because part of it, it starts here and then it works its way through in the physical side. You know, Charlie, I know you know this, but the 93 Phillies were the exact same way.
Right.
They were a team that you never felt like were out of a game. And it wasn't until, I think, 2008 that we had that feeling again in Philadelphia. And yeah, when you know your team is capable of putting up five in the blink of an eye,
right. Yeah.
you're not at any game. So, all right, so you're down 7-5. The Phillies add another one in the eighth on a Jimmy Rollins base hit, makes it 7-6. Once again, the bottom of the ninth, though, you're trailing by one. Ryan Howard would fly out to center field to start the inning. Shane Victorino grounded out. So now you're down one, two outs. But the team does not give up. Jason Wirth would single. Eric Bruntlett would double to right field. Bang, game tied at 7. Just once again, and again, now it's Eric Bruntlett that's getting the job done. Jason Wirth and his wheels, you know, it's just a different way every night, right?
Exactly. You know, like that's why that they say you got a 25-man roster, and when people are doing their job, like Bruntlett, to me, Bruntlett got the big hit in this game. You know, like, and for a guy to sit over on a bench, I can relate to that. And come off and get a big hit in the game. Believe me, that's very important. And that's also when we talk about our team, we can talk about the depth that we had on our bench, and also the guys that we could put in at the end of the game to really make our defense a little bit better too.
Yeah, you know, it's the thing about baseball is it takes every single guy. It really does, you know, and more. It takes more than back then, the 25-man roster. You know, you need 30 guys, 35 guys throughout the course of the season to make an impact if you're going to get all the way to the end and be a champion. And this 08 team certainly had that for sure. All right, so we're all tied up. Once again, your bullpen, terrific. Mattson pitches the 10th and the 11th. J.C. Romero pitches the 12th. Rudy Cienes, there's a guy that you don't talk about very much. He pitches the 13th. They allowed just two hits between them over the course of that time. So the bullpen's great. In the 13th inning, Victorino leads off with a triple. They would walk Wirth, and they would walk Bruntlett. Brett Myers would pinch hit. For Cienes, again, a pitcher pinch hit. Now, he struck out. He would have his moment later in the season, but he struck out there. Then Chris Coase would end it with a base hit. A game over. You win the game. It's a gut punch to the New York Mets after being gut punched over and over again. And, you know, as much as it's a positive for you guys, what it must have done to the Mets psyche, it was pretty powerful as well.
Exactly. Without a doubt. These games like this definitely can, you know, like that kind of drives a nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, this was a big game for us, but not only did it deflate the Mets some, but it picked us. We even got higher. You know, like, and that's kind of how the game goes. And that's why I like to stay even keel.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because, Charlie, and again, you remember this, I'm sure, but and this is a message to all the folks watching here in 2021 and what this team is doing. You take a half-game lead after winning this game. You're leading the NL East with 5 weeks left to play in the season.
Right.
But that half-game lead in the division would disappear just like that. We didn't know it at the time, but you lost in the first week of September. You dropped all the way 3 games back behind the Mets once again. So you guys went one way, the Mets went the other. And I would imagine people were pulling their hair out 3 games back with 4 weeks to play. But, you know, we all know how it ends, but it just goes to show you that a lot can happen and you do have to stay even keel throughout the whole thing, right?
You know, Murt, when I think about it, what have we got? We got like 38 games left in our season. And we're going to have some, to me, we got a chance to really see some great baseball in those 38 games because we play a lot of games at home. I like our schedule. I mean, we still got a couple tough teams to play, but at the same time too, you know, like we keep our heads up, stay even keel, come out there with a mentality that we're going to win that game that day. We don't look back. We don't look forward. And I guarantee you, you know, like we're going to see some good baseball down the stretch.
And that's what it's all about. And you're talking about the 2021 team. You're not talking about the 08 team at this point. You're talking about this current 2021 team. And it's really kind of it's similar because you were probably having the same conversations with your 08 team at that point. 3 games back in the beginning of September. That's not too much to make up. It's not at all. You just got to take care of business. And that's
exactly
that's the parallel in
2021. I mean, we were in a good position with a chance,
yes.
You know, like to definitely do something real good. So, you know, like, and sometime down toward the end of the season, that's all you can ask for at times.
Yeah, it really is. It's just good. Be there.
Looking forward to it, Merv.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it too. Do me a favor, sprinkle some of that 08 magic dust over top of these 2021 guys, and let's get it done, right?
I'll be watching every game, man. If not in Philly, I'll be watching them at my house. So
there you go.
Forward to it.
You and me both. Charlie Manuel, always great to talk to you. We will catch up with you in another week or two, and we'll get to the end of this 08 season. I have a feeling it's going to end pretty good, so we will get there. But Charlie Manuel joining us here on Glove Stories. We'll be right back after this. Glove Stories with Murph is brought to you by Red Robin. Whether you're hungry for a juicy gourmet burger with bottomless steak fries and an ice-cold beer, or a crispy chicken tender salad and freckled lemonade, whatever you crave, there's something for everyone at Red Robin. So dine in or order curbside to go, delivery, or catering. Order online now at order.redrobinpa.com. Glove Stories with Murph is presented by Parx Casino Sportsbook app. New users download an app store or click parxcasino.com/PA and use the promo code MONEY for first bet risk-free up to $500. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Glove Stories with Murph is presented by Parx Casino Sportsbook app and Red Robin and is a production of SBC Media Partners. The engineer for Glove Stories is Chad Evans. Cindy Webster is our marketing and guest relations director, and our executive producer is Roger Haddon. Whether you are watching us on YouTube or downloading the podcast from one of our major podcast providers like Apple, Google, or Spotify, make sure to hit like and subscribe so that we can let you know when a new episode of Glove Stories is available. We'll release new episodes weekly throughout the 2021 Major League Baseball season.